Welcome everybody back to the Oklahoma Drill Podcast. I am your host, Andrew, and as always, my co-host Matt is here with me. Matt, we have Jets football to talk about, kind of somewhat a little bit, but it's something, and we're back, and we're very, very excited to be here and to talking about the first couple of days of Jets training camp. Officially, the season is right around the corner. We are, I believe, just about 2 weeks shy of preseason week one. Correct me if I'm wrong, Matt, the Tampa Bay Buccaneers opponent to start the preseason this year.
That sounds right. Let me take a look.
You double check on that. I'll keep leading in for what we're going to get into today. We are going to get into the initial start of camp, the first couple of days, the sights and the sounds, the things to be excited for, the things to be worried for, all the over and under reactions and everything in between, as well as we're going to continue on breaking down the college quarterbacks for this coming draft, the 2027 draft class, expected to be very talented with a wide range of potential high quarterback prospects. We're going to start going through a list. We've gotten through 12 written down. We're through two so far. We got another two coming through today. Before we get into it, Matt, I want to throw things to you here first. First couple of days of camp, main thing I want to talk about is going to be some of the injuries. So why don't you go ahead and break down some of the injuries that we've heard? Nothing overall really from anywhere that's majorly concerning. And as of right now, he knocks on wood. That is a good thing.
Yeah. And yes, they are playing the Buccaneers on August 14th. So I would say the biggest one is Sweat, which is a hamstring, right? I believe. Sweat, Pons, and Mazi Smith. I think all hamstrings, right?
All three of them.
And then we're just talking about him for a whole hour before.
We're going to skip the Joseph Osai rabbit hole that Matt and I unnecessarily went down. But Osai is starting on the PUP. His injury is undisclosed, according to Rich Samini, as you would let me have known and informed, due to a failed physical. From what we've heard from Glenn and the rest of the brass, nothing majorly concerning for anybody that's listed.
Yeah. The only thing I would maybe notice, like with Sweat, is that durability is something that I would kind of be looking out for with him. So any kind of, you know, time missed kind of perks the ears up a little bit.
Lower body for somebody that large is not a good recipe.
Exactly.
So hopefully they can, you know, get this out of the way early, get him the rest, get him back in shape, and he can get some more strength in that hamstring, and it doesn't need to be a major problem. I do think the caveat, if we want to focus on Sweat and Osai, because I think those are the big ones. From everything with Pons, it sounds like it was, he felt like a little bit of a tweak, and they're being overly extremely cautious because he's going to be a major contributor, and he's a DB, and soft tissue for DBs can be a pain in the butt to deal with as the year goes on. So hopefully for Pons, he can get the rest he needs, and then it isn't a recurring issue. For Sweat in particular, he isn't hopefully going to be playing that many snaps per game in this defense. Where, yes, you want to make sure he is in condition. Yes, you want to make sure that he is not getting too big, not getting unable to be a down-in, down-out contributor, to practice when you need him to practice, to be ready for camp. You want all of that, and this definitely doesn't help. But I also don't need the guy playing 65 snaps a game on defense. I need him playing like 25 to 35 snaps a game, dead in the dead center of the defense, taking on double teams the whole game. And you do that on first and second down a couple of times, you know, for 40%, 30%, 35% of the snaps throughout the game. That's all we really need from you. And so if we can just get him to that level of conditioning, I think we'll be okay.
Yeah, and I'm sure that's absolutely possible. And, you know, this isn't exactly his first season, right? We have we already have some years under his belt that we can look at and kind of judge where he might be with us, and you know, I'm okay with it until I'm not okay with it, but right now I'm just, you know, perked up a little bit, but it doesn't seem like something to really worry about just yet.
Bookmarked but not flagged,
exactly,
is how I would put it. Definitely something to keep in the back of the mind, but nothing to immediately worry about for the time being. There are some things, though, we can be excited for and we can be positive about, and that's over the first couple of days, and I think that's where we want to focus to next. Overall, really the thing that I'm just so happy to be able to talk about through these first couple of days of camp is that they seem to have a functioning offensive operation, that we haven't gotten any reports that people are struggling to line up in the right spots, that they're struggling with the cadence, that Geno's struggling with getting the calls in, that, you know, we're having rookies struggle to learn their parts of the playbook. And from all indication, it sounds like they're two of their top three draft picks being pass catchers in this offense are going to be heavily featured and already expected to be major contributors like we were hoping they would be. Seems like they're doing just fine. No one's skipping a beat. No one's, you know, having any problems understanding what's being asked of them. And you have a competent, functioning pro level NFL quarterback who's proven that he can operate an offense in multiple spots under the center in Geno, where that's all you're asking him to be this year, is just be a functional adult starting quarterback, be 2017 Josh McCown. That is all we are ever hoping and asking for you to do in this moment. And that's what he's been. Frank Reich seems to be really meshing really, really well with this offense as a whole. I mean, listen to Garrett Wilson talk about Frank Reich if you want to hear anything. And Garrett is a very, very smart person, a very, very well-spoken person, and very careful and intentional with his words. And it is tough to get him to crack or waver or give you something that he doesn't mean to give. And the way he talks about Frank Reich, in the sense of it being something he hasn't had before, to me is like kind of telling to what he's dealt with throughout his career. When you look at starting with Mike LaFleur, and not saying that he can't be an effective play caller, coach, etc., but for Mike LaFleur, coming from Kyle Shanahan especially, there is no wiggle room. There is no improv. There is no, well, I felt the corner was leaning me this way, and I felt if I just gave a little bit of a drift, I'd get some more separation coming out of the break, and it was a quarter of a second later than I wanted to break, but I'm still going to be there on time and make up for it with my explosion. And Mike LaFleur is the type of coach where it's like, nope, I said break at 12, break at 12. Then you go to an Aaron Rodgers as a quarterback and Nathaniel Hackett, who's just going to be right under what Rodgers was expecting. Do I even need to say the words red line? That's the type of offensive operation that Garrett's been part of in a lot of ways throughout his career. And even Engstrand, not that I think there was a lot of friction there or anything else, and they didn't get a ton of time to really mesh and gel and see what we could have gotten a full season of Garrett and Tanner together working. But a lot of the roots in Tanner was a lot of the same ways. It was Ben Johnson, which is West Coast, Shanahan, wide zone type of style, where there might be a little more creativity, but it's very much, this is the play, this is how it's designed, do it exactly this way, because this is how I timed it out to be. And Frank Reich, being a former player, a former quarterback, and somebody that's been around the game for a long time, has, you'll hear the players themselves say it, empowered them to make their own plays, to feel things throughout the game, that we don't want you completely freelancing, we don't want you completely just making it up as you go, but you're talented, you're here for a reason, you're Garrett Wilson, you're making $130-something million for a reason, go prove it. Go do what we drafted you to do. And who cares if it's not exactly how I showed you the clip of X receiver from 1994 here that ran this route perfectly and you did it exactly that way. You got open and the play worked and we scored, and that's what matters. And I'm very excited by that, because I have not seen an invigoration out of Garrett like this in a long time. And for better or for worse, Matt, Garrett Wilson is like my judge of how things are actually going behind the scenes. Like, if Garrett looks like he's locked in and on board and not like in it for the good person that he is because he wants to do it for the team, but he's fighting through the things around him, you can tell this is different. This is like he finally feels like there's people around him that operate the same way he does.
Yeah, it does seem like a top-down change that is really kind of sunken in with these players. But then I wouldn't even stop at Garrett, because I think Garrett becomes a better teacher also when he trusts the people above him. You can hear Cooper talk about Garrett and how he's been teaching him releases and how to, you know, attack leverage and when to attack leverage, how to study DBs. So when you've got this many layers of learning and expertise, it sounds encouraging, right? I don't want to put like way too much stock in anything right now, because it is very early. And it's very easy to get sucked into these things when, especially after a long summer when you haven't really heard anything. You
gotta, after last year in the offense that we watched last year with, and again, I'm not going to go back on anything we talked about, Matt. I know I was probably more bullish on this than you were, but I still think there was some good play design with Tanner Engstrand. I don't think that he was completely inept as an offensive coordinator and that was completely and totally the issue. We think we know what the issue was, and that's been improved, but having the Frank Reich overall wealth of experience just comparatively is hard to argue with.
Yeah, and the fact that it's not just on offense also, it seems team-wide, the amount of experience, especially along that defensive line as well. That Dunbar connection to him and Bailey, I feel like, is going to be one of those combos that are really going to take over the some games.
Yeah, Dunbar might have done it again if day two is any indication, because today was the David Bailey show. And yes, it's early. No, the pads are not on yet. And I want to put that like super extra bright highlighter, underline, underscore, star, whatever. The pads aren't on yet. But man, you couldn't have asked for a better day two from the second pick in the draft. I mean, from every report from every beat writer that was in attendance, it was David Bailey was dominant. It wasn't David Bailey was good. It was David Bailey was the best player on the field today. We have two young, talented offensive tackles that we're very excited about. Something that I wish we had more time to really get into. Olu in particular showed up to camp looking yoked. Absolutely. Like, I don't even want to say roided, because that's not what I don't want him getting a test for anything. But holy crap, his legs look incredible. He looks great. We know how talented and built and strong Membu is and athletic to go with it. So for David Bailey to be looking really good, again, even if it's not in pads, but for him to be looking dominant, as it was reported to us, against the tackles that we have, the starting offensive tackles that we think are going to be pretty dang good this year, man, you got to be really excited to hear that.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, when especially a top five pick, right? You're putting a lot of the eggs in that basket. And
highest drafted defensive player in Jets history.
Really?
Yeah. He is the highest drafted defensive player in New York Jets history. That is a true statement.
We've had a lot of high picks too, so that's a little surprising, but I believe it. But also just the things that we saw on tape even before we drafted him, and seeing how that's already showing up is something that we should be seeing. I don't want to, again, I don't want to get too excited. This is what we should be seeing. All right? Right. And being where we should be is a great start.
Absolutely. I think if you want to look at the barometer of where you would hope to be in this stage in a general sense, not even in a best case scenario sense, and we're in a good spot, everything's great, we're going to temper our expectations. You want David Bailey to look like he belongs. You want to look like the flashes of the physical talent are there, that he looks athletically like he belongs, physically like he belongs, mentally like he belongs, and that he's not completely and totally swimming, that he's not getting overmatched by the talented guys the Jets have, that he's taking his lumps here and there, but he's getting some wins here and there. It would be a much bigger concern if it was, man, Olu and Membu were just putting the paws on David Bailey every rep. And he's going to have to learn, like, nope, this is the NFL, kid, and they got some good tackles, and you're going to see more of them when you get to other teams. So, you know, start getting behind it. And if we started to see, you know, issues with him in team drills in the run game, but I saw a couple of clips or a couple of post from reporters that were there talking about how he was doing a really good job as the backside defender in the run game, staying home, not over pursuing, and then using that explosion and speed once he is free to go and clean up and make the tackle and get in and prevent big gains. If he can do that in the run game, heck yeah, we're cooking. We don't need you as much as we don't want you to be completely targeted and victimized. And we talked about that needing to really improve when we were studying him as a prospect, when teams are running directly at him. But there's going to be some times where he's on the backside. And if he can make some plays in the run game doing that, that's going to go a long way to keeping him on the field even more. You would just be hoping to see where he is right now of, okay, everything's great. Today was better than that. And that's why I think we need to make a note of that, is that this is probably exceeding what your expectations would want to be for day two of camp. And Hopefully it continues. Hopefully when the pads come on again, super highlight underline when the pads come on, that he can continue to do this. But better than you could have hoped for early reports from David Bailey. And as somebody that we knew was very talented, we might have been an Arvel Reese podcast, and we're not going to go back on that. At least I'm not going to. There was never a moment where we were denying this guy's talent and denying the quality of the player that he is. It wasn't a matter of we think Arvel Reese is better. It was we think Arvel Reese's potential to be better at a different role that's harder to find. And David Bailey, for what his skill set is very much, yeah, his elite trait is I'm incredibly lightning quick, explosive out of my stance, and I'm going to fire around you before you can do anything about it. And that's what we saw today. That's what you would love to see.
Yeah, and he's not the only one. Sadiq as well. He's looking every bit the freak that the moniker that he kind of took on in college. He looks absolutely huge and dominant out there. I can't wait to see what he does against an actual defense in a game. I want to see these weapons just be exploited left and right. And if we're able to, you know, pass it around and spread the wealth amongst these weapons, it's going to be really hard to defend this offense.
Yeah, no, it really is. I've talked about it before. I'm giddy with excitement for Kenyon Sadiq. Absolutely giddy with excitement. I'm kicking myself that I didn't study him more in the pre-draft process, Matt, because now that he's been on the team and I've gone back and I've watched and I've dug into him more, I've looked at his body composition, I've listened to him speak in interviews, like, I think he's going to be an absolute freaking superstar. I'm not saying it's going to be right away, but I think this dude is going to be an absolute freaking superstar in this league. I almost wanted to say, I had to look it up and then temper my expectations, but I had to check what was the rookie tight end receiving yards record. And then I remembered Brock Bowers had like 1,100 yards as a rookie. I'm like, yeah, I don't know if he's going to do that.
No.
But this guy is going to be one of the most dangerous pass catching weapons on any team in the league, I think, by the end of his second season and possibly earlier.
I could see that. And just the fact that, you know, we have Mason Taylor right behind him as well.
Right.
Like, the depth is something that, you know, doesn't get talked about enough. You know, I mean, usually we're just worried about who's starting.
But, yeah, right. Let alone depth.
But it's good to kind of see that, especially when it comes to offensive weapons.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Including the wide receiver group. We talked last week about this going to be in an environment where A.D. Mitchell is going to shine. And I think through the first couple of days, we've seen Geno peppering him with targets like we expected. This is the environment where he can win. And I was very much down on A.D. Mitchell as a prospect coming out of Texas, but not for the physical ability. It was for the mental makeup, and it was for the lack of interest when things weren't being done your way. It was the absolute complete lack of interest whatsoever in the run game if it was not a run directly to your side. The hot and cold streakiness in which he would play with. And I really think we've seen throughout his first couple of years in the league, maybe a little bit of humbling for Adonai Mitchell, that you go to the Colts, you're a second round pick. You don't go as high as your talent definitely could have let you go. You struggle to get in the lineup and make plays when they really need you to. You finally get some opportunities. You make some plays. You have a major blunder that blows up. The team gets frustrated with you. You get traded in as a throw in with the Sauce Gardner trade. You get shipped off to the Jets. You go have this terrible year. There's no solid quarterbacks. Garrett Wilson gets hurt. You're the number one target all of a sudden. And it's week 8 and you're having to figure things out. And now you've had the year to just be where you are, know your role, know what you're going to do, digest the playbook from the offseason, go through your training, go through OTAs, get situated in life and being in New York and not Indianapolis, and be comfortable. And hopefully we can get the Adonai Mitchell that's bought in that was not the Adonai Mitchell that was on tape at Texas. And if that's what we're getting, then I will be the first one to say I blew that evaluation and color me wrong.
Well, that's also one thing that we've noticed the being in the right place, you know, an understanding of what's going on and where to be. That seems to be a trend that's kind of, you know, making its way throughout the entire team, is that they look functional, or at least it sounds like they're functional. I can't say they look functional because I haven't seen anything yet, but
We would know if they're dysfunctional. And yes. I think that's the kicker here, is that as much as I do think, at least right now, and I, not to make this any sort of an extended topic at all, just purely a statement, I think right now the Jets beat is actually in a pretty good place, where I do think they're covered very fairly. I don't think there's many guys with any outright vendettas or people just, you know, looking to send things out to make clicks. It happens here and there for everybody, but overall, I do think more so now than definitely in previous years, we can trust what we're getting out of the Jets beat. And if this offense was completely dysfunctional, they would tell us, because they would love to get the clicks out of it. Let's be honest. It hasn't been that way. It's been perfectly fine and operational, and that's all we can hope for.
Yeah, that's something that's been missing for so long. So if we're seeing it already, that's only a good thing.
Yeah, absolutely. I definitely think so. Matt, before we get to these college quarterbacks, I want to ask you one question here. We did hear from Aaron Glenn today in his presser that come Monday, the pads will be on. That is the earliest the NFL will allow for padded practices. And Glenn, you know, kind of joked quippingly back to reporters who asked him, pads coming on Monday? And he's like, oh, you never have to ask that. They're allowed back on. They're coming on. We that for sure that we're going to be in pads. So we know pads are coming on Monday. I want you you to answer for me. What is the one thing you're most excited to see when the pads come on?
I want to see Bailey continue this rise that we're expecting from him. When those pads come on, it becomes a lot more real. And he's got some monsters on the bookending that offensive line for him to go against. So, yeah, it's great to do it, you know, in shorts and looking great like that. But when the pads come on, that's when you really want to see it.
Yeah. Yeah, I completely agree. I'm going to go to the exact same position group, just on the other side, funny enough. Somebody we haven't talked about yet, but who's been having a pretty good camp so far, Kingsley Enagbare, potentially could be a much bigger role on this defense than we anticipated when he was just brought in. It was Osai got the 3-year deal and he got the 1-year deal. But early on in camp, especially with Osai not being there and being on the pup, Enagbare is getting a lot more opportunities to make plays. And despite this being an environment that you would think would be less conducive to his game as a bigger, longer, heavy-handed defensive end type, he's still showing up. He's still showing up with speed. He's making wins as a pass rusher. He's showing up in the run game. He sounds bought in. He sounds like he's excited to be here. Aaron Glenn talked about how he coached him in the Senior Bowl when he was still with the Lions, and he was still, and Enagbare was coming out of South Carolina, and he was the perfect type of defensive end for his defense then, and he wished he would have gotten a chance to draft him and he didn't, and now he's got him back here. And man, put pads on, you're doing this without the pads and your game is built for when the pads do come on. I really want to see if that carries over, because that might be the guy that we spent a lot of time in this spring and summer going through talking about this defense that we didn't really mention much, and we might get to the regular season and Enagbare might be one of the mainstays on this unit.
Yeah, very well could be. I remember really liking Kingsley when he came out.
Yeah, you liked him a lot more than I did. We definitely both had caught the eye of, man, this dude is just technically sound. He sets a hard edge. He collapses the pocket as a rusher. There's some flexibility. There's some bend. It's not perfect. He's a good athlete. It's not great, but you more so than anybody really was like, I just think he's going to be in the NFL for a long time and does things the right way. And so far, that's what he's done. And if he can do even more than that, then heck yeah, that's a find.
Yeah, I would love for Dunbar to kind of uncork that genie.
Absolutely.
There's a lot of talent along that defensive line that if he can get his hands on all of them and make them even just a little bit better, then you got something there.
Yeah, you absolutely do. They have, again, like you talked about earlier, depth that they haven't had in a very long time at a very crucial position group.
Yeah, for sure. That's good to have.
That is absolutely good to have. Another thing that would be good to have is a quarterback, and that is why we are spending so much time looking at these potential college guys and who might be the Jets' target. With the widest scope we possibly could of a range of 12, not saying all of these guys are going to be first round picks, but there's going to be a lot of talk between now and the end of April next spring. We want to go ahead and get a jump on that now, get our thoughts laid out on these guys to start the year, and then kind of track and see where they improve based on where we think they need to improve, if their strengths carry over and everything in between. Matt, I'm going to start this week because I think you started last week here. Let's talk about Trinidad Chambliss from Ole Miss. Going to be a very, very polarizing quarterback. 2 weeks in a row now, I'm picking very polarizing quarterback prospects to lay out my opinions on. For Trinidad Chambliss in particular, I'm still exactly struggling to figure out where I ultimately land on him, because there are parts of his game that I really, really like. There are parts of his game that I even love. And there are parts that really worry me. And if you made me lean one way or the other right now, based on what I've seen, I think I'm going to be out on Trinidad Chambliss. And the number one reason I'm going to be out on Trinidad Chambliss is just, I don't think he's big enough. And I wish he could overcome that. But it shows up. I'll start with the negative and then get to the things I love. It shows up when he is in the pocket passing. He gets passes batted down a lot. A lot. Very frequently. He needs to take significantly deeper drops in the pocket to give himself that space to throw, because he is a very compact throwing motion, which is a good thing. It's mechanically sound. I don't have any issues with his motion. I think he's got more than enough arm talent to be a starter. It's a starting NFL caliber arm for sure. The problem is, you're not creating a lot of space for yourself, and you're already shorter in stature. He's listed at 6 foot by Ole Miss. He was listed at 6'1 in high school and 6'1 at Ferris State. So I guess he shrunk an inch going to the SEC and going to Ole Miss. We'll see what he ends up measuring in at the combine. I'd be pressed to think if it's any more than that 6 foot marker. And so you're already shorter. The linemen in the NFL are already that much bigger. And you are not creating that much space with your arm as is in your motion for the ball to get that much higher than it's going to be with your shorter frame. And that's leading to a ton of batted passes. I think he has the arm talent to adjust his arm slot and find those windows to create space. But it's that much harder when your arm doesn't extend out as far to create the window, or you need to take that much further of a drop back to create the space in front of you to allow yourself to throw and even see what's going on in front of you. But if you keep him clean, and if you give him space to throw, and you let him just play kind of a point guard role, I think the dude can just throw the ball on the screws a lot. He makes some absolutely gorgeous throws downfield, especially outside the numbers, especially with intentional ball placement, where I'm throwing a smash concept against cover two. Those that don't know, smash concept is when you have two receivers to a side of the field. You have your farthest receiver is running a quick little curl route, and then your interior receiver, your slot receiver, is usually running a corner route behind it. It's designed to isolate that flat defender in cover two, and you're going to make him have a choice. He's either going to sink deeper with the corner route, in which case you take the easy curl, or he's going to bite on the curl, and then you throw the corner over his head. Either or, you're reading that one defender. And he had a play, I think it was against, I just watched this game earlier today, Oklahoma. He had a play against Oklahoma where he's throwing smash to his right side. It reads it perfectly. Corner bites down on the comeback. And as soon as he starts seeing that he's screwed and it's smash and I've got to get back and get depth, Trinidad's already starting to throw. He notices that the safety, again, it's cover two, so there's a deep safety on the other side. He notices the safety has his back turned and he's tracking a post that's cutting over the middle of the field from the other side, and there's nobody in the voided space behind that. So rather than just throw the ball exactly into the drop spot of the cover two and hit the hole shot, if you will, he leads his receiver with the throw a little bit further upfield, and the receiver has to adjust to the ball in the air, which if you're not paying attention to the what he's trying to do, you would think it's an inaccurate pass and the receiver was open and he had to change where he was. No, it was Trinidad knowing you're open and you're so open that there's no one behind you. And if I just put this ball a little bit further ahead upfield than you're expecting it, I'm going to start turning your body and start cutting upfield. You're going to catch it. You're going to turn around and look up and there's going to be nothing but green grass and you can go and run. And it ended up being like an extra 10 or 15 yards after the catch on this smash concept because of the throw from Trinidad Chambliss. he does that quite frequently. And it is very, very impressive. It is any time when he's pressured within the pocket, when he has to operate quick within the quick game, that's when things can start to get muddy. But man, you give him a line, you give him space, you give him some weapons, you let him be in an offense that features his mobility, you allow him to attack outside the numbers and put the ball in spots that only he can put it in. I can see a world where he proves me wrong. And he goes on to be, I'm not going to say anything more than a starting NFL quarterback. How good of a starting NFL quarterback that is will be yet to be seen. But if he is at that level to be a consistent down in, down out starter and a team is glad to have him under center, I think there's a world where that happens. I just worry that he's not going to be able to overcome the physical limitations because the rest of the physical gifts, while good, are not elite. And I don't know if they're good enough to make up for that lack of stature. Matt, I'm really curious to hear what you think about this guy, because I have a feeling we're going to differ on opinions here.
No, not really. I think that size is also like the biggest red flag for me. I think that he's got a hard ceiling because of it. And
that's a very good way to put it.
But he also has a high floor. So you put those together, you got a decent prospect that you can that has some upside, especially with his legs. But also you got to worry about the injuries, and if this guy's like 5'11 out there running right. the, like he did at, in Ole Miss, it's probably not going to be an injury friendly time for him. That, and he's got a lot of batted balls, so it's not like it doesn't affect him, because it does affect him.
It clearly affects him, and that's the issue for me. Is I can, if you can overcome the size, I'm willing to forgive it. There's always going to be the injury risk. There's always going to be that aspect of it, but I think body type, composition, how you're built, where your muscle is, and the intention you put into your body to avoid injury, I think that you can. There's ways that you can make up for that. It's not an absolutely end all be all killer. But it's affecting him now in college. It's only going to affect him more in the pros.
There's one other thing. His eyes, I feel like they give him away.
Oh, God, Matt, we are on the same page, because the last thing in my notes is exactly word for word, predetermines throws too often for an experienced starter.
Yeah, he stares down his first read.
Stares down his first read a lot.
And that's not a size problem. That's a processing habit.
No, for somebody that's already started more than 30 career games.
Yes. Going into his sixth year, getting rid of that habit, I feel like, is going to be a lot harder than we would like it to be if we were the ones drafting him.
Absolutely. This is why I love doing this show with you, because that was going to be my last final point of, like, this is why I can't buy in, is everyone is going to make the argument of, he's super experienced. He's super, you know, had all these career starts. He's going to enter the NFL with like 50 plus career starts. He's already, I think, at 38. He's going to play 12 games in college, plus any potentially in the playoff or bowl games. There's a good chance he's going to have more than 50 career starts. But for somebody with 38 career starts, or in their 35th or 36th or 37th career start, man, does he stare down his first read a lot. Yeah. And there's a difference between trusting your play call and being smart enough to know that guy's just not open. And yes, it's quick game. And yes, it's supposed to be three-step drop, and I'm going to hit this slant route, and it's third and 10, and it's isolated X receiver on the backside, and that's the call. And that's what Lane Kiffin told me to do. And that's what I'm going to do, is I'm going to throw this slant. And it's like, yeah, but that guy is blanketed. There is not a single passing window whatsoever, and you still throw it right at it. And now it's incomplete third and 10. Now you're punting. That happened significantly way more than I was expecting to see for somebody so experienced. And if that hasn't gotten better already, how am I supposed to know it's going to, when things only get harder physically and mentally?
Yeah, it's only getting harder. Yeah. And if you add in the physical limitations as well, You put them together, and you have a lot more red flags than I would probably be comfortable with.
Absolutely.
But his dual threat with his legs will always, you know, add value to, but if he didn't have that, then there'd be, I don't think we would be even talking about him right now.
I tend to agree with you. And really going into my evaluation, again, what my baseline expectation was, knowing it was going to change when I actually saw the film. But my idea was like, okay, I'm hoping to see that you're like 75 to 80% of what Kyler Murray was as a prospect. And that, yes, you're small. There's no way around it. But you have an NFL starter plus starter arm, and Kyler's arm, even now, and especially when he was coming out as a prospect, was great for anybody, let alone somebody that size. The electric speed, dangerous elusiveness in the open field, inability to tackle, hard to tackle in the pocket, make plays and extend plays, and be a gnat for defensive coordinators. I'm like, if you can be 80% of what Kyler was in A&M, Trinidad, maybe we can work this. But I do not think the physical talent is to that level. I'd probably put it at like 65 to 70 of Kyler Murray as a prospect. And there's the mental issues. It's really hard for me to want to put my eggs in that basket and bet on that outlier.
Yeah, I wouldn't either. But you know what? It's... You know what else kind of irks me? The whole, do I join the NFL or do I not join the NFL? That also just kind of put a bad taste in my mouth when I think of him. Like, what are you doing? I understand you haven't had that much time in a top tier level of college football, and maybe you want to show a little bit more, but as far as like his draft stock, and sure, if he can't, he's got all these issues with processing, but if he came out in his fifth year, I'd feel a little bit more better about it than his sixth year. So that's also kind of irked me. But
well, hopefully, I mean, we'll see that improve in year six. Is that, you know, the, and with no Lane Kiffin being there and a different offense and things being different, maybe we'll see him have a little more freedom to come off that first read. Maybe it is more of a how he's being coached to play devil's advocate. And to further play devil's advocate, I can understand you spent a lot of time in D2. This is now major college football. You were just in the college football playoff. You winning a national title might mean a lot to him. Winning a D1 national title and a D2 national title. How many players can say they've done that in their careers? There might be more of a reason for him wanting to return to school and not necessarily will I, won't I the NFL, because he didn't know if he was going to be allowed for a long time. And this isn't a situation to make an immediate comparison. This isn't Brandon Sorsby, where you didn't something that caused you to be under investigation and be ruled ineligible, and you were trying to find your way out of the ruling of the thing that you were never denying that you did that was against the rules. This was due to a medical situation going from D2 to D1 and how it worked kind of against Trinidad Chambliss directly, to where it wasn't that Trinidad did something that he was being penalized for. It was, is the rule going to allow me to do this going over years? And without knowing ultimately what his ruling was going to be, I can understand not wanting to say publicly beforehand, I don't want to go to the NFL. I want to stay in college football. Like and plus with the NIL deals and everything and him being a high profile quarterback, Matt, you know, he is an agent. You know, his agent was never going to let him. Well, even if it was not go to the NFL, if it was not go back to Ole Miss, if it was where, what other team might want to negotiate with me? You're not going to say anything outright definitively before you have a reason to. And then once he was ruled eligible, that was immediate. Nope, I'm going to Ole Miss. I'm staying there. I'm playing my sixth year, and that's it.
Yeah, I mean, that's fair enough. But you know, we'll see if it was a good decision or not, I guess.
It very well might not have been, because yeah, there's a chance that you're not going to catch lightning in the bottle, and you're not going to have the Lane Kiffin effect of designing some easier plays for you. And not that everything was super easy for him, and that's where he made plays. He did a lot to elevate that scheme, but it might not be as good of a situation, and it might have ultimately not been a best situation in a much, much more talented quarterback group. Like the guy you're about to talk to, Matt, I am very curious to hear you talk about him, because getting into his tape finally over the last couple of days, wow.
Impressed?
Holy crap, impressed.
Okay. When I heard people talk about Darian Mensah last year and how they kind of hoped that he came out and they were really putting some first round expectations on him, I was a little skeptical. And you know what? I probably still am a little skeptical. I love his accuracy and ball placement for sure. He's a touch passer. He varies his arm speed. He places a deep ball with pretty good precision. And he decently takes care of the ball in the air. His arm strength, I think, will limit him. I would say it's good, but it's I wouldn't go too much further than that. But he's a guy that you can see can take care of an offense. He is able to process within structure, pass with anticipation. He's got good pocket movement. He's definitely mobile, but he's not a running quarterback by any means. But being able to really move around in that pocket and avoid pressure, and pretty good thrower on the move too.
Very good.
So it's he's got capabilities that if he can, you know, really just improve, keep improving there, there is a very good chance that he does sneak into the first round, if not just be a solid first round pick. One thing that I did kind of not like is all his fumbles. He
there's a good and a bad to that, and I'll get to that.
I think he had 9 fumbles. The ball came out a lot, whether it's not feeling pressure from behind or whatever.
He just doesn't give a crap about pressure.
No.
For better and for worse.
You know what? I don't want to say that for sure, because I would say that when, how did I put this? When he's forced off schedule, you can kind of see that his decision-making kind of tails off as well. I don't want to say it's, you know, something that can't be fixed, because it definitely can't be. He can definitely keep going through those progressions and stay, you know, focused on everything around him as well. But you know, he's got the first part down. I think he can get the next part down as well. Size, durability, is what,
6'3", maybe? About 200 pounds? 205, about 200. I think is what he was listed at. I'll double check that, but 6'3", I know for sure.
So it's, I mean, he's got the height that I'd be comfortable with. The weight's a little but again, he's not a running quarterback like Trinidad is.
Listed at 6'3", 205.
Yeah, 6'3", 205. So I'm not entirely worried about that, unless it's of the fact that he's so dialed in on what's going on downfield that he's doesn't have the awareness of what's going on around him, then that can get him hurt. But it's there, but it's not one of the biggest things. I would say between the arm strength and the fumbles are definitely the things that need to improve if they can.
Yeah, I'm gonna counter you a little bit here, Matt, on the arm in particular. I think he's got a really good arm. I don't think it's necessarily top end of the league or anything necessarily close to it, but I do think he's got some arm talent. And I think the thing with him, and you alluded to it at the start, he's really in a lot of ways a touch thrower, because he is, at least out of the handful of guys that I have watched so far, nobody is in rhythm like this. Nobody is on time in their drop, and on time with their eyes, and syncing their drop and their feet and their eyes and everything in their motion together, to where he is at the point in the play where he is ready to make the throw a lot of times before his receivers are. And he's having to take some air off the ball, or he's having to pace his throws so that he can hit his targets on time for when they're going to be ready for it, not necessarily when he is actually ready as the play is designed. This kid's footwork and execution and mechanics from literally from his toes to the top of his head is gorgeous, Matt. It's textbook. It is textbook. He looks so comfortable taking three steps drop. The second my back foot hits, boom, my foot's in the ground, and now I can turn and fire in the quick game. Oh, it's a seven-step drop. I'm going to take my seven steps. I'm going to make sure I get my depth. I'm going to hit. I'm going to give my one little hitch up in the pocket. My eyes are never going to drop. I'm going to hit this deep dig right on time. No problem. It looks so natural for him. It looks so easy for him. And it's not often, but there were a couple of plays in the few games that I watched where he has to drill a ball in a tight window. He has to really, you know, put some extra mustard on the ball to fit it in there and use all of the arm talent that he has. And he did it. He didn't have any issues. He had a deep ball against Clemson that was I'm trying to think of the actual route terminology because I'm forgetting at the time, but it's a go from the inside slot, like the number three. You know the route Devontae caught a touchdown against the Jaguars a few years back when he was with Rodgers?
There's no way I remember that, but it sounds fun.
Again, Devontae lined up in three receivers to one side. He's the most inside receiver. He's like dead on the hash mark, and you just run straight up the hash mark up the field, and it's a cover two beater. And Mensah had a play like that against Clemson where he's throwing from just a yard or two from behind the 50-yard line, and he puts like a good bit into the pass. It doesn't look like it was the hardest throw he ever had to make in his life. It doesn't look like it was the most difficult ball. But the ball was perfect. It was on time. It was in front of the receiver. He led him in front of the coverage. Receiver was open. It walked him into the end zone. It wasn't an any bit of anything that you could say the ball was underthrown. It was literally perfect. And it didn't look like he was trying to throw as hard as he could. So I think there's more in the arm than he puts on tape. That doesn't necessarily mean that it's a limited talent outright. I think there's more you can squeeze out of that.
All right, fair enough. I think that I really just kind of where was it? Kind of the longer outside throws outside the numbers. I feel like it just kind of died a little bit up there. But yeah, I mean, if he hasn't been showing his max, then yeah, it's more than suitable for the next level.
At least to me, it doesn't look like. In his routine down to down play that he is making his passes in, besides those deep outside the number shots that you're talking about. And I do agree that is an area you would want to see him improve on. I do think that you don't really see him look taxed in throwing. You don't really see him look like he's having to put in a bunch of effort. He's not having to get his entire body into it. He's not trying to, you know, having to really rifle to try and get things in hard. I think all the time, to Drew Brees in New Orleans, where it was like every muscle in Drew Brees' body had to move to get him to throw the ball with enough pace to make it count. And he did it for a long time. And he was really, really good at it. But if you look at Drew Brees throwing a 15-yard dig versus Mensah throwing a dig, I think there's less physical effort involved in Mensah. The thing with him, Matt, that really jumped out to me specifically, and this is, I have to take you back to before we did this show and one of my prouder evaluations, to be quite honest. I flip on this evaluation. I flip on Mensah's tape in Duke. He's wearing number 10, just how he looks in his uniform. He's got the looser sleeves on the side and the number 10 immediately comes to my head. I'm like, oh, wow, he kind of looks like Jordan Love. And I'm like, just physically, like not thinking anything different from there, just physically. Huh, kind of looks like Jordan Love. And then a couple plays go on and I'm like, okay, got some good movement. Okay, really like the eyes downfield. Every single time you throw the ball, I can see the intention and what you're trying to do. And that is what sold me on Jordan Love at Utah State. I had Jordan Love, I think, as my QB2 that year behind Burrow. I was very, very high on him. And for the reason, despite the completion percentage, despite necessarily what the tape was always showing you immediately, if you broke things down, even in his misses, you could tell what he was trying to do and the decisions that he were making, I supported. And it was like, okay, the results might not have gotten there, but I have no issue with you taking that chance in that spot. That guy's open enough. You put the ball close enough and it was a miss, but you missed to where the ball's out of bounds, not to where you threw an interception, or you're throwing a check down and it's just outside the receiver's hands and it looks like you missed a quick check down, but it's outside the receiver's hands because you're leading him away from the defender and you're trying to get him to turn his body naturally to catch the ball while also having him avoid the defender that he doesn't see that's behind him. And you're if you throw that dead on him in his chest, then that defender is going to take him out of his cleats and you're saving him from a big hit, even though it was a miss. Time and time again in Jordan Love's tape, I saw stuff like that to where I'm going, I get it, kid. You're trying your hardest. You're undermanned. The talent isn't there. You're not playing with everybody else, but you're trying to give your guys the absolute best shot they can to maximize their talents and put them into positions to succeed. And I saw that time and time again out of Darian Mensah too, to where it's hard for me to not sit here and go, from an early comparison standpoint, I think his Jordan Love-esque. I don't think the physical talent is it quite Jordan Love's arm talent? No, I don't think so. Jordan Love's also about 20 plus pounds heavier. And I do think probably a little bit more dangerous as a runner. So I don't know if it's fully to that caliber, but man, back half of the first round, I don't have an issue with that as of right now. From what I've seen, I'd be perfectly fine with any team that made that decision. And that's about the range Jordan Love went. So I don't see how that's not too far off to me.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like if you put him in an offense with a lot of talent that could get separation, like, he'll just pick defenses apart.
He will murder defenses.
Like, they won't have a chance between his processing and ball placement and intention and anticipation. All of that would just, you know, I don't want to say he would be a game manager, per se, right? But he,
I think he could be like an assassin is how I would put it. It's not that it's a game manager. It's that I'm going to be so on top of everything that the second you make a mistake, it's an issue. Like, again, highest possible ceiling comparison, not saying this is what he is, who will be or anything else, but from the play style that you're talking about, that's Joe Burrow. That's how Burrow plays, is that I am going to always be on top of everything. I'm going to see every mistake that you make and I'm going to punish you for it every time to where you have to be perfect or I will make you pay. That is the type of quarterback that he can be. You alluded to it, Matt, and I'm kicking myself for not doing it or mentioning it myself earlier. Holy crap, is he good against blitzes?
Oh yeah.
Holy crap, is he good against blitzes? Like, it's another day at the office walk in the park for him. Go watch the Clemson game, people, if you need any evidence of that from this past season. And for somebody that has only started 27 games as opposed to Trinidad Chambliss's 38, man, this guy looks a heck of a lot more comfortable and a heck of a lot more trusting in his eyes and what he's seeing and knowing to be open or not. I was very, very impressed with Darian Mensah. Absolutely borderline blown away.
All right, I wouldn't say blown away on my part. I mean, I definitely liked him, and I definitely think that, especially because he's going to be at Miami this year.
Mm-hmm.
So I have a feel that new setting is going to probably, if he does well there, it's going to skyrocket his stock up the boards. There's a difference between playing really good at Duke than playing really good at Miami. So if he can continue this upward trend and show up, I think that really the sky's the limit for him.
Yeah, no, he really can. You want to compare talent levels, the level of talent that he's going to have and the weapons around him at Miami as opposed to Duke, it's going to be night and day. And this is the exact type of guy that if you put him in that situation and you give him that talent, he can elevate it to the highest of their potential. I don't think it's a situation where I don't think Darian Mensah needs a supporting cast around him to succeed. But I think if he has a supporting cast around him to succeed, that supporting cast is going to be in the best possible position they can be. Like, Matt Ryan in Atlanta in like 2014, like MVP Matt Ryan year is like the peak of that. We got Devontae Freeman, we got Julio Jones, we got all this other talent on the offense that we're just decimating people with, and Kyle Shanahan calling the plays, and Matt Ryan is going to put them in the best possible position to succeed. It's not that he's necessarily carrying us. It's not that he's the only reason that we're good, but we are as good as we are because Matt Ryan is as good as we are. And you put Darian Mintz in a similar situation, I'd be really curious to see how that looks, because I think it looked pretty good.
Yeah, and he's going to have Malachi Toney. I think his top target at Duke also followed him.
Mark Fletcher in the backfield. He stayed at Miami.
Yeah, so there's definitely going to be a lot there for him to work with. It's going to be fun.
Yeah, I'm really excited to see him. I came away a heck of a lot more impressed than I was expecting to. I'm really going to be following him a lot closer going into this year, because I'm really, honestly, based on the tape, I get why there's some people out there that are like, no, Darian Mintz is really, really good, and I don't get why people are talking about it. Like, I think I'm becoming one of those people.
All right. I'm still, you know, I want to see more, but I could definitely see myself getting there as well.
For sure. For sure. Very, very curious to see as this goes on. We are going to continue breaking things down. Next week, the pads do come on. We will be breaking down all of the sights and sounds from the first week of padded training camp practices, as opposed to the shells that we've been in just to start. Keep it locked right here. We'll also have even more quarterback breakdowns as we get closer and closer to the regular season. Preseason week one, August 14th against the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Thank you again, Matt, for confirming that earlier in the show. Be there or be square. We know we're going to be watching every single minute like the degenerates that we are. Can't wait to see you all there with us. Keep it locked right here along the way. Appreciate you for stopping by. Matt, let the people know where they can find you, and we'll wrap this one up.
I'm Matt. You can find me at Zazija.
And you can find me at AndrewGolden_17. You can also follow the show at OKD Podcast. Thank you all one more time for stopping by, and we'll be back real, real soon. Bye-bye. Thank you.